1450 WROL, the spirit of Boston.
And good Saturday morning, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Car Doctor Program on AM 950 WROL, the Spirit of Boston, 100.3 FM. If you're listening over there, WROLradio.com, TuneIn Radio, the app. You can always check out the app. Any of your favorite app stores, you can find WROL on the app, and you can listen on your smart speaker, all kinds of things and ways to be able to find us. You can listen on your phone with your phone in your shirt pocket. You can do all kinds of ways to listen to us, and I appreciate every single one who does. Hey, if you're in the East Providence, Rhode Island area today, take a ride down by the new AAA office off of the Wampanoag Trail. And there is going on at 10 o'clock today. There is a car seat checkup event. You can check it out. And, you know, if you have a child, a grandchild that needs to be properly fastened in a car seat, you can check it out. Have somebody put that car seat in for you. Dennis seems to be having trouble with the phones. Or not.
No, there's no trouble with the phones. It's trouble with the phones for the guest that you want.
Oh, why?
I'm getting a busy signal.
Oh, okay.
How do you get a busy signal in today's...
Cell phones? I don't know. I don't know. That's a good question. but maybe you just do sometimes. I don't know. So, Dennis will deal with that. We have we're going to be talking to Joe Hearn coming up. He is from Advanced Remarketing Services, which is not at all what you think it is. We'll give you some more information about that coming up.
Maybe.
Jay Mays, who was a designer for Ford Motor Company, formerly with Aston Martin, he worked on the Ford Fusion, the design of the latest Ford Fusion. That was his design. And he retired from Ford Motor Company as chief designer in 2014. And he said he was sick of doing appliances. Well, now he actually is doing appliances, I guess. Last week, Whirlpool Corporation announced that Mays will take over October 15th, his 64th birthday, as vice president and chief design officer. Mays made the comment about appliances in 2013 interview of automobile design and production. He was discussing the state of the automobile design at the time, not white goods. It's unclear whether Mays will relocate from London, where he'd been based at Ford, to Whirlpool's headquarters in Michigan. Whirlpool likes Ford executives. Mays is at least the third high-ranking ex-Ford guy. Well, it's interesting. I met Jay Mays at an event in Cambridge once, and I guess the appliance, even though he said he doesn't, you know, the thing about designing appliances, he loved walking through Target and looking at the small appliances in Target to see what was going on, see what was up to date, look at the colors that were fashionable at the time. It was sort of interesting. It was interesting that he would be that involved. So to see that Jay Mays is now gone from that to something else? Yes.
It may have been user error.
Oh, yeah? Are we all set now?
Yeah, we're all set.
Oh, we're all set. Okay. How could it be a user error?
Because I keep forgetting that these phones, you don't have to dial 9 before you go
on. Oh, yeah, yeah.
You just dial the number.
Yeah, that could be. Didn't you work for a phone company
in
for a bunch of years?
Every phone that I had a call out on, I had to dial 9
all
or
right,
7.
All right, fine. So, with us on the phone is the president and CEO of Advanced Remarketing Services, Joe Hearn. And I met Joe, I guess, this week when he won an award. And the first thing I kind of said to myself was, I don't understand this company. Joe, good morning and welcome to the Car Doctor Program in Boston.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, well, let's start off first. You know, I said to my producer, Dennis, Advanced Remarketing Services, what do you think that is? And he's like, a company that remarkets returns from Amazon? And I said, not quite.
No, we Our interest in Amazon is like everyone else's. My Amazon Prime account is very important to my daily life, but it has nothing to do with what we do for a living. So our company, Advanced Remarketing Services, and maybe it's a poorly chosen name, is focused on vehicles at the end of their useful life. The term remarketing, you guys are familiar with, because it really refers to the transfer of vehicles at wholesale. And the remarketing industry includes automobile auctions, wholesale transfers between dealers, really the traffic of around 14 million cars annually fall under this broad and really misunderstood, if you're not in the industry, term, remarketing. Well, I guess the advanced part comes from the fact that we are focused on what has traditionally been one of the least sexy and most kind of important parts of the vehicle life cycle, and that's the end of the useful life. So our services are focused at really at the recycling sector, and we connect recyclers who are actually manufacturers. They manufacture either used parts or the raw material that come from recycling vehicles into the recycling stream. So the vehicle is a more heavily recycled consumer product, and while people don't spend a lot of time thinking about it, it's a really interesting process to get that car off to the end of its useful life.
How much of a car?
I don't even know if that helped. I don't know if that helped.
It did. It actually did. Yeah. How much of a car is actually recyclable?
Well, that can be answered several different ways, right? Because the automobile recycling rate is already over 120% because so much of a vehicle built in, either 15 years ago or in 2018 is built from recycled content, mostly because the steel and the ferrous metals in the vehicle are infinitely recyclable. But if you really want to talk about individual vehicle or what's kind of recyclable, there is no part of the vehicle being built that hasn't been considered all the way down the recycling stream. And while parts, there are certainly things that don't fit neatly into our waste system when you talk about auto recycling, traditionally that's considered the auto fluff, mm-hmm. the non-ferrous, non-petroleum, non-recycled materials. That's, they're always looking for new creative ways to use that particular content, and the amount of that content that goes into the cars is really reduced. Plus, the recycling stream gets more and more sophisticated as time goes on, and they are now able to harvest, precious metals and metals in really small amounts from electronic components of vehicles. It's not your grandfather's junkyard.
Yeah.
Right? It's a modern technology organization. And that's why ARS has a role, because we connect those types of organizations.
Yeah, if somebody was just tuning in a few minutes ago, they would think you owned the world's largest junkyard. But in fact, that's not. You're really a technology company. You're not a salvage company.
No, right. We're a technology company. We don't own a square inch of real estate. We're trying to park vehicles and do the hard and important work that our recycling partners do.
And the name Advanced Remarketing Services. When we think of companies that do vehicle donations, whether it's the Salvation Army, the Kidney Foundation, Advanced Remarketing Services never pops up on those lists. Are you sort of the Oz behind the curtain of some of those companies?
That's kind of a nice way to think of it. So. The curtain is actually what should be the donor's connection with a charity that they know, trust, and support, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it is true. Advanced Marketing Services run one of the nation's largest and probably, I'm convinced the nation's best vehicle donation program.
Well, if you don't think so, who is?
Yes, that's a very good point. But not only do I think so, also the California Attorney General thinks so. Anybody who kind of follows through on these programs, there's some reporting that actually supports my assertion. But we, behind the curtain, run the National Vehicle Donation Programs for Habitat for Humanity, UNICEF, American Cancer Society, March of Dimes, the Arthritis Foundation. We have also run vehicle donation programs for the CarTalk vehicle donation program for a period of 11 years and probably have that relationship as well. The reason you don't hear about advanced remarketing services in that conversation is because we're the processor, right? We never really try to put our brand first. We do have kind of a website and a service that is at cardonationwizard.com. If you would go to cardonationwizard.com, you'd be able to select from a wide array, like the array of charities that we represent. And for the most part, the large national brands that I just mentioned are who we are most closely associated with. We've raised, you met us through the presentation we got. We've raised over $150 million for the charity partners that we work with and have returned over 80% of every gross dollar back to the charity, including all costs of transportation and processing. And that makes us the gold standard in that industry by a country mile.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit. You know, when people donate a car to a charity, they, you know, they're able to take a flat $500 donation from that, and then anything additional, if the car gets sold, they can take that additional deduction on their taxes. But not all of these car donation sites are created equal. In fact, I'm not sure all of them are charities.
No, no. And actually, some of the ones that I would really warn consumers against using are in fact 501c3s. But aren't charities they are charities in a legal sense, but not in the sense that you would most hope. This industry has a well-earned and deserved black eye for a lot of kind of quasi-legitimate processors getting involved in this business because they're able to essentially acquire an asset from a donor for $0, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there's if you continue to look behind that curtain and find out if it's what kind of demon Oz is, it's there's a lot of people that you would hope a lot of charities that might go by a very cute kids sounding name or a jingle
poor spelling of the words.
Exactly, that's one of my favorites. Or near misses, the broad association, are you dealing with, like, who are you dealing with when the word cancer is in there? People have been duping donors for many, many years, just because donors are out there trying to solve two problems. One is they want to do something good with their vehicle, and they want to get it out of the driveway in many cases, and that creates way too much opportunity. So, there are large national organizations doing tens of million dollars in car donation, and I have never, ever seen the work that they do in the street. There are quasi-religious organizations that hide their religious affiliation behind these cute sounding names, and you, again, have never seen the difference they've made in your communities. So it's pretty despicable. It is pretty despicable. The California Attorney General, who's been very proactive on this, the Minnesota Attorney General has been very proactive on this, Texas. These states have, uncovered programs where there's been, tens of millions of dollars raised, and less than, 14% ever get back to any charitable organization. So it's a well-deserved black eye, and I caution people to be careful about who they work with. Doesn't certainly have to be me. There are other organizations that I respect to accept our donations as well. But if you deal with any of ours, you'll know that they are actually run to and for the benefit of the organization, which makes us pretty rare in that space.
Yeah, it sounds like it really does. And you're right. It's easy for a company to sort of take advantage of somebody, especially if it's maybe it's a loved one's car that they passed away 5 years ago. It's been sitting in the garage and it had some sentimental value. Now it's just starting to be something that takes up too much space, and it's like they want to make sure it goes the right way. People contact me a lot of times and they'll ask, well, what charity should I use? And a lot of times I'll say to them, I caution them about the same things you just did, but also, you know, maybe a charity that, that mirrors your own beliefs. And, you know, if you want to donate to, you know, a veterans organization, or you want to donate to a kidney found, what, you know, whatever it is, look and see if that mirrors your beliefs and then see what kind of charity supports them and whether the money's actually going to the charity or not.
100%. I mean, and it's a very timely lesson for donors in any space and vertical, right? The, there's over 750,000 501c3s in the United States. Probably that number is a lot higher now. That's an old number. And it creates a tremendous amount of choice. But, you know, your point is so well made. You know, look around, ask the question, take those two steps. Because not only is the money not getting back to the organizations you care about, but those same kind of spurious, tricky sneaks aren't really properly executing the transfer of your vehicle, right? Hmm. They're doing one very dangerous practice, which is called skipping title. They don't have you sign the title over to the charity or their agent. So in this particular case, if you have an affinity, or you know, you volunteered for Habitat, right? Hmm. They're one of our favorites,
yep.
And I've been a long-term volunteer of those as well. When you go to donate that car, you are actually going to sign on your title, Advance for Marketing Services. Now, the reason you're not filling out Habitat for Humanity is because they're taking tens of thousands of vehicles and they're not an automobile dealer.
Right.
But I'm acting as their agent in this transaction, so you can sign over the title to us. And that's all wonderfully disclosed on our website.
Mm-hmm.
But anyone who just encourages you to just leave the title blank and we'll take care of it, run away. Run in the opposite direction.
Right.
You are now in the danger zone, right? Whether or not that they are claiming at that point that your car will find its way back to Habitat, or that your car will support, you know, American Cancer, they're not. I mean, I can't even tell you how many times our charity partners have had to send cease and desist about, you know, using their names and reputation. It's shark infested. It's shark infested waters.
Yeah. No, you bring up a really good point, because I've seen that with just, you know, people see a car for sale and they'll go to buy it and they'll say to the seller, oh, just sign the title. I'll fill in the rest of it. I'll make sure it's done. And all they're doing is reselling it sort of under that person's name and skipping paying the registration, title, and sales tax as the middle person, and they become essentially a car dealer, which they're not.
Right,
yeah.
Right. And you basically handed over the keys to a missile, an uninsured vehicle at
right.
that point, to a buyer that you think you know, but you don't, because they're not the charity or the representative you hope for.
Right.
And there is a limit to your liability in that situation, but it's a lot higher than you think it is. We're rendering, I mean, if you go to any one of Associated or Associated Properties, you'll see pretty detailed information about title transfer and appropriately executing your title on behalf of these charities and organizations. It's a step that we probably are very careful about, and I see our charity car donation industry is really, really cavalier about. So
we're talking with Joe Hearn, the president and CEO of Advance Remarketing Services, and I think we've kind of really taught our listeners a lot about some of the pitfalls and problems that could be in the car donation and sort of the end of life of vehicles and what's going on with them. Now, you don't obviously sound like a junkyard guy. How did you get into, what made you look at this? You sound like a tech guy. How did you get into this and say, you know, there's a need for this, and I'm maybe the guy who can build a company and can make the need?
So, first, you know, I don't need to correct you, but I'm a junk guy.
Oh, okay. All right.
I'm a junk guy. These are my people. I love what they're trying to do.
So do you walk in a junkyard, take a deep breath, and say, I like the smell of a junkyard in the morning?
I'm home. No, it's not quite that. But I've just been associated with this industry for a long time, and I have so much respect and it's one of these places where you find so many smart and committed entrepreneurs that it's really been a real source of pride and joy to continue to be associated with the terrific organizations like the United Recycling Group out of Recyclers Group out of Texas, the ARA. Like, there's some
yep.
really great junk guys out there that I'm proud to associate with. But you're right. I am a technologist, right? We have a company full of of people who aren't out operating loaders and heavy equipment. They're trying to connect buyers and sellers in real time through our applications and tools. But the answer to the question about how I got involved was by accident. And it was through a previous life where I was a fundraiser. I, in Rhode Island, actually, was working for the National Kidney Foundation in the early 90s. And at that time, they had a car donation program that was kind of, that kind of fell out of the sky. It was a long time ago when they weren't kind of a part of everyone's life. But at that point, the National Kidney Foundation, I think, was doing around 72,000 donated cars annually because people were looking for a solution to this end-of-life question. And they scaled very quickly, and they approached, because of the scale, the Massachusetts Register of Motor Vehicles approached a guy by the name of Bob Lyons, who was just one of the smartest guys in the salvage space, about how do we do this, how do we scale this quickly and do it in a responsible way. Well, Bob, who was a New England guy and his Boston's work, his businesses were all over the Northeast, developed a solution for them, and that's how I got presented to this world and to Bob, who would eventually become my business partner, who I would eventually go work for, and his company, Auto Placement Center, for a number of years. I would then get absorbed in an acquisition, go work in the automobile auction industry. But it was a series of happy accidents. I like cars, but I wasn't ever a gearhead or anything like that. I didn't leave college with an intent of kind of becoming a junk guy or a technologist. I was trying to figure it out. I would ultimately become an entrepreneur because I thought that the channels that were being used to handle these end-of-life vehicles were inefficient. And it just didn't make sense to me. The amount of touches, the amount of transportation, the amount of wasted effort that was happening to get a car from, you know, the driveway or the scene of the accident or it's, you know, wherever the end-of-life occurs, was just enormously wasteful. And fortunately for me, I think it might have also been a little bit unemployable at that point. I really wanted to do something that I thought would matter and make a difference, and the opportunity to work for charities and start out on my own was enough. So we organized Advanced for Marketing Services. We started with Habitat because, again, I'm a 20-year volunteer of that organization, and kind of continued to grow from there.
No, well, and it is one of those things that we have to think about. We have to, as we consume so many cars, we have to think about where they go when we're done with them. And we want to know that if we think we're doing the right thing, we want to make sure we're doing the right thing. And I think it's companies like yours that help those charities that are doing the right thing, that bring their money back, is really important. And congratulations on your Best of Rhode Island Award from the Social Enterprise Greenhouse and all of the folks that went into that award and the presentation that went to it. And again, I think it's sort of you're one of those best kept secrets kind of out there doing what you do and caring about what you do and making sure that it gets done correctly. If people want to find out more information, website they can go to learn a little bit more about you?
Sure. Especially on the topic of car donation, we're very easy to find. It's cardonationwizard.com. Mm-hmm. And when you get on those landed pages, you see the charities that we're contracted through to perform their services. But it answers a lot of questions about our donation services and everything like that. Our company website is ARS Cars, for Advanced Remarketing Services Cars. And you'll see there are other product offerings in the space for dealers and dismantlers and consumers. But I so appreciate the opportunity to have this conversation about car donation. It's obviously something that not only me, but our entire organization is very passionate about. The award we were presented is really all credit is due to what I'm most proud of, which is a terrific, kind of really loyal and determined staff who have been with us since day one. So, we continue to grow very, very quickly, and we'll probably we're hoping to be less of that best kept secret and more in these types of conversations, but thanks for the invite to the show.
And you're located in the smallest state in the country.
Yeah, probably.
It's a great thing. And you said you like cars, but you're not a gearhead. Anything special in the garage?
Yeah, well, there's, yeah, biases, yes, there's a couple things. We have a 1973 Eldorado convertible that we call Betty that we take out on these beautiful New England fall afternoons. My daily driver is a 1985 Dodge Ram Charger. It happens to you. I say I'm not a gearhead, I'm not a real car guy, but once it gets in your blood, that whole thing, it's there to stay.
Well, I think today's going to be a great day to put the top down in that in that 1973 Eldorado and cruise around with what was for the longest time the biggest V8 engine produced, I think. So.
Yeah, 500 cubic, That's a real interesting vehicle, front-wheel drive. It's a pretty cool car.
Yeah, it really is. Hey, Joe, thanks for taking time out of your Saturday morning and join us on the Car Doctor program here in Boston.
Hey, I appreciate it. It was super fun. Thanks for the opportunity, and great knowing you.
All right, take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
It's Joe Hearn. He is the president and CEO of Advanced Remarketing Services. I met him at a luncheon. I'm sort of I'm on the D list of invitations for stuff. It's like when we buy a table to support certain things at work, and they say, hey, you know, who wants to go to lunch? And then it eventually gets down to we need somebody to fill a seat. So that's usually when I go to those things. So, and I'm fine with that. You know, you get a lunch, you get to meet somebody, and I don't want to do it all the time. So it all works out good. So, and Joe really didn't have a lot. He didn't give him a lot of time to talk, but one of my coworkers said to me, you know, he sounds like he'd be pretty interesting. Maybe we should chat with him. And I think there's even more to talk about maybe in the future with, with AAA as well. So all kinds of stuff. Well, I got a note from, of all people, the people at Capital One, and it says October 2nd marks Name Your Car Day for drivers to embrace the fun and lighthearted side of car ownership. And I think when people donate their cars, and they donate, you know, their whatever the name of their car is, they feel bad sometimes seeing it go away. But 2018 National Name Your Car Day survey commissioned by the GM Buy-Power Card, which surveyed 1,276 licensed drivers in the United States, found that 42% of the respondents named their vehicles, with nearly three-quarters, almost 75% of those surveyed acknowledging that naming a car fosters a stronger bond with that vehicle. Of those naming vehicles, the survey revealed that women were 7% more likely than men to designate special titles for their cars. 55% of respondents went one step further and personified their vehicles as female. The most popular names drivers bestowed on their vehicles were Betsy and Betty, which I thought was kind of very traditional old-timey name. 78% of drivers who have named their cars say they know someone else who has named their car as well. They're not shy. 82% of their drivers said they share that name freely with family and friends. 56% said car personality, make and model, color influence car's name, because 43% of drivers want to name theirs after they've owned it for a month or so. So they want to check it out and see what it feels like. But I thought it was interesting that people name their cars, and still interesting that Betsy and Betty were popular names. You know, every once in a while when we talk about what happens, you know, if the world goes to ride sharing, if people just share one car, or they go to ride hailing with Lyft and Uber, you know, people are like, well, cars will be, like Jay Mays, tired of designing appliances. Cars are just appliances. People don't name their washing machines, and people name their cars, and a big number of people name their cars. So sort of interesting. Most people spend, it says here, they spend at least $1,000 a year towards their vehicle. This includes maintenance and aftermarket upgrades. So they put that personalization sometimes into their car, or they go buy a car named after a movie like Dennis did.
Well, yes. the other thing is that a lot of times the car is the is someone's own personal space. Even though they might not like sitting in traffic and they might not like their commute, there is that, okay, I got nothing going on. It's just me. It's never going to be ride sharing or all that. Just, I mean, that'll grow significantly, yeah, but it's not going to be exclusive.
Sometimes on a daily basis, people spend more time in their car than they do in waking hours with their spouse.
This is true. This is very true. Yeah. I'm looking at one right now.
Exactly. 617-770-3030, 617-770-3030. Let's talk to Tom in Weymouth. Tom.
Yes, good morning, John.
Good morning.
Since you're talking about junk vehicles and so forth, can you legally junk a car at a local junkyard, let them take it? If you don't hold the title, you don't have it, you lost it?
You're not supposed to be able to.
Okay, so legally you're not supposed to.
Now, does that happen from time to time? Yes, it does.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes what happens is they'll take it without the, I've heard of it happening before, but technically every car is supposed to have something that sort of signifies where it went from you to somebody else. So in theory, if you ran the vehicle identification number on your car and it would come back registered to you, and then when that car went into a junkyard and maybe it got resurrected from the junkyard, it went back and it would still, the vehicle identification number would still show to you somehow. So yeah.
So if you were junking a vehicle, okay, and you say, well, I'll go get a title, reapply, pay the fee or whatever, yep, just to make sure things are right, and you give it to them, and you want that car, you know, you just want it to be junked.
Yep.
Not, how do you verify that reason? Liability, you know, people take things and then something happens.
Well, once you sign it over to them, it's theirs and not yours anymore.
Okay, so as long as
so once you put, you know, John Paul's Auto Salvage on the title,
right,
it's not yours, it's now it's mine, and then anything that happens to it afterwards, I would be, you know, responsible for. So when they find the dead body in the trunk,
right.
Yeah.
So that's the way to do it, to really cover yourself 100%. Okay, the next thing, if you were going out to purchase a new car, brand new, from a dealer, what steps would you take to do this? You know, to get the best price, to make sure you're not getting, is there a certain amount of steps you have to answer if you want to think about it and talk to it later?
No, it's, I guess I did it not too long ago. You know, first off, the first one was determining what I wanted, you know, which is always, you know, you have to decide, you know, what I want. So,
sure.
And the second step is do a little bit of research. So you can use, you know, the internet's a great place to do research. So you can go on, you know, cars.com, NADA, Kelley Blue Book, find out what that car should, the retail price, so the sticker price that's on the window, and find out what the dealer paid for the car. Then it's
so you
same,
can find that out?
You can
find you really
it.
Find?
Well, within, you know, you're never going to know about things like dealer holdback and other bonus incentives that come up down the road. So,
yeah, right.
So when I bought my Hyundai Santa Fe recently, I did all the research. I knew about what the car should cost. You know, I knew what the dealer cost was. I knew what the retail price was. And because I bought a base model, there wasn't a lot of room for profit in there. And then I looked at rebates and incentives that were available. And at the time, Hyundai heavily rebated the car because they just came out with a brand new 2019 model that is a little bit more expensive, but it has a ton of technology thrown in on top of it, like, you know, lane departure warning and blind spot monitor, all the things that were an option on the previous model. And it's also about an inch or two bigger. So they really were trying to incentivize the old ones to get them off the lot to make room for the new one. So they had a big incentive. Then I used the AAA car buying service, which is really sort of the Oz behind the curtain, is really TrueCar, another website that does car buying plans. So I looked at that, and I looked at the price that was available through that. So then I was So I said, you know, this is, you know, it was a, I'm making up the number. It was a $28,000 car that came down to $22,000 when we were done or something. So I looked at it all and said, well, you know, this sounds, you know, I can afford this, and it looks like it's a good deal. And it was sort of interesting, and as we were negotiating back and forth, and I bought it through Prime in Rockland, and they sort of have their own price, but I came in with this price, and it seemed, you know, I was happy with it. And so I'm talking with, you know, the sales guy, then the sales manager, then I went in and talked to the, you know, the finance guy, and, you know, and I said to him, and the other thing is, by the way, if you finance with them, the price can actually get just a little bit better because they make money in the financing. They don't really make money in the cars anymore. So financing actually adds a little bit of an incentive for them to do a little bit better price-wise. So I sat there and looked at it, and I said to the finance manager, I said, oh, where'd you work before you came here? And he told me, oh, I worked at an Infiniti dealership. Well, I happen to know the Infiniti representative, and I said, oh, do you know Andrew? And he said, oh, yeah, he's a really good guy. We worked together a lot. And I said, where'd you work before that? And he said, oh, I worked at Copeland Toyota in Brockton. And I said, oh, do you know Dave, who, the service director there? Oh, yeah. And I said, you know, before. So we got a little rapport going. So we're all done. And I said to him, just between you and me, what did you really make on this car? And he spins his computer around. And he says, that's your transaction right here. And he points to the computer screen. And I said, does that say minus $1,195? And he said, yeah. And I said, how do you keep this building and all of the prime buildings and lose $1,200 on a car sale? And he said, we make it up on another one. He said, you didn't buy any options. You didn't get any, you know, you didn't buy gap insurance. You didn't buy wheel and tire insurance. You didn't buy lost key insurance. He said, that's where our profit's made more on that than it is on the actual sale of the car. So he said, we lost money on you, but on the other hand, we gained a customer. We took a customer away from someone else. He said, you could have gone to the Hyundai dealer in Brockton, or you could have gone to the Hyundai dealer in Quincy. You could have gone anyplace else. But he said, right. No, now I took you away from them. So for us, losing $1,200, knowing that we're going to make $5,000 on a, you know, when we sell a Volvo, makes, you know, at the end of the day, can make some sense. So it was mostly about looking at all the prices up front and saying, here's how much it costs, here's what their cost is, here's the incentives and rebates that are available. What you don't know about, though, is when maybe at the end of the month or the end of the year, they might get an additional incentive, maybe $500 or $1,000, for each vehicle they sell over a certain number. So if they sell more than 1,000 Hyundai Santa Fes, they might get, I'm just making this up, they might get $500 more for all 1,000 that they sold. So all of a sudden now, they sold $500,000. They just got a $500,000 incentive check coming to them to allow them, you know, to buy more cars. So,
right.
You know, that can happen. That can happen too. So that's an incentive that no one knows about until they make their number or whatever it is. So that's about the only, that's the best thing you can do. The old days of lots of profit being made in cars, I remember in the old days, if I sent you to, you know, hey, you know, I had a good experience, go see this guy, ask for the salesman, tell him I sent you. In the old days, they would send me a check for $500. You know, that was a bird dog fee. There isn't $500 made in some cars today. I was just looking at a base model Hyundai Kona. And the difference in price between the dealer cost and the retail was only $800. So there's not that big profit there used to be years ago. And I remember, you know, I knew a Mercedes salesman. He said, we used to make $10,000 on every car we sold. He said, we just don't do that. It's made in the service department, or it's made in the financing department. It's not made in so much the selling of the cars.
So just in the simple advice, so if you run a deal and you look in the cars, stick a price as $30,000 even, just to simplify it. Is there any ballpark percentage you could use
that's probably relative
to anything? If it was a $25,000, $35,000,
it's probably in the 10% range. So you know, if you looked at it, it was 30. The dealer probably paid $27,000, but there might be, depending on the time of the year and what they're doing with the cars, there may be, you know, $500,000, $2,000, $3,000 incentive on that car. Like on my car, there was a total of a $3,500 incentive package to sell the car, so it took $3,500 off the price of the car.
Right.
Yeah. So and those numbers are out there. Those numbers are out there.
They're out there. You just have to keep digging,
You have to do a little bit of work.
All okay. Right, thank you.
Okay,
yeah,
thanks, Tom. Yep, bye-bye.
Yeah, bye-bye.
617-770-3030, 617-770-3030. You're listening to the Car Doctor Program at AM 950 WROL. Let's talk to Paul and Lynn.
Hi, John. How are you?
How are you?
Good. I've got a question. I owned a Dodge Magnum. I had it for 10 years, put 200,000 miles on it, and I needed it. Had an issue with it. It was going to cost me more than it was worth, and so I was looking for a car.
Yep.
And I loved the Dodge, and I loved that chassis, and so I was settled on a Dodge Charger or a Chrysler 300. Looking through the Carfax website about a little over a month ago, I found a Chrysler 300. It was a 2015.
Yeah.
It had 1,100 miles on it.
1,100?
1,100. So, anyway, the Carfax was sort of clean. It was purchased in Montana in March of 2016.
Mm-hmm.
It was repossessed like 6 months later, then showed up at an auto auction in New York this summer, and I bought it from a used car lot in Malden a few weeks ago for $18,000.
Okay.
The car is perfect.
Mm-hmm.
I had it brought in. It still has some factory warranty on it.
Yep.
I had them do, they'd had a couple of recalls. It had a minor little cosmetic thing. I had them fix that. I had them check it all out. They said it's fine. What do I do with a car that was used so little for 3 years? Is there anything special I should be doing for precaution?
No, I think you did it already. You had the car all checked out. You know, I assume they changed, change the oil and things like that with it.
Yeah, it's got fresh. They did it at the dealer, but I'm going to do it and to make sure another couple thousand. Yeah. It's got a sticker on it, but I'm going to
when it has 4,000 miles
on it, I'm going to go to synthetic.
Yeah, and the same thing. The coolant's been in the car for 3 years, and it probably has another 2 years worth of life. So if you normally would say, you know, I'll change my coolant. I just bought this new car. I'll change my coolant in 5 years. You know, you might want to do it next year or the year after, even though you're not going to have that many miles on it, but just only because it's been sitting in there. Other than that, the only thing I would probably do would be when it goes in for an oil change service, only because it sat for as long as it did, I would just have them take some silicone spray and just lubricate any of the rubber bushings a little bit, because they may have been a little bit dry sitting in one spot. And the other thing is, I'm surprised the tires are as good as they are, where it didn't get driven a whole heck of a lot, that they don't have, even though
the tires still have the little mold marks on them.
Yeah, but they can still develop a little bit of a flat spot sometimes, and they won't be quite as smooth as this.
So I had a front end alignment, four-wheel alignment, and I had them take off the tires and rebalance them all in case the wheel weight fell off.
And it sounds good and quiet going down the road?
I can't believe it. And after having an old technology car, having one that lets you see where you go when you're going backwards has navigation, has all the bells and whistles, it's really amazing. But
I think you've done everything you need to do to it, and go out and enjoy it.
Yeah, I love the car. I like I said, I missed the Magnum. I wish they kept that one around.
Yeah, well,
was, uh, That was a beauty. I had so much fun with that. I've had Dodge products since about 1990.
Okay.
And, our Chrysler products,
yep.
And I can't say enough about them.
Yep. You're three
up and down times, but yep. They're great cars as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, your 300 is actually still using when. For a very short period of time, when Mercedes actually owned Chrysler, your 300 is actually using the E chassis platform.
The E class chassis.
Yep.
And like I said, the Magnum had it, and it's a beautiful. Plus,
yep.
It has the all wheel drive, so it's great in this
yep.
area.
That car over the years with the New England Motor Press Association has won the best in class for winter vehicle awards. So no, it sounds like you hit on a winner.
Yeah, well, like I said, I show people the car and
yeah.
I tell them, well, it's three
yeah.
years old, and they sit down and I say, look at the mileage, and
no.
they go, well, now it's got like 2,300 on it.
Yeah,
go,
no. It sounds, Paul, it sounds like you did well.
Yeah, I'm tickled pink, and I love your show. I try to sleep in on Saturdays, but you wake me up and I stay awake.
All right,
you mess me up for the day, but it's nice hearing a guy that has some practical knowledge and advice.
All right, thanks, Paul.
Take care.
Yep, bye bye.
617-770-3030,
617-770-3030 is the phone number. You push that button first, then you move that up. Okay, let's talk to Tim. Tim. Good morning.
Yes. Good morning.
There we go.
Thank you very much for having me on. I have a question for you. The missus and I are not very car literate.
Okay.
We've only bought one car in our history. It's done us very well, and we're ready to get a new one, but we're going to get a used car.
Yeah.
I want something. I'm looking at something that is not too old. You know, fairly newish, a couple years old,
mm-hmm.
So we don't have to worry about it for a while. But we are rubes. We are, you know, we don't have the experience to go in and hicker and dicker and negotiate. So what should we look out for so that we're not taken advantage of? Because we're very easy marks.
Well,
and what places should we look for?
In that case, I would go to a place like CarMax. CarMax
okay.
is a big, and they're all over the place. And I think there's one down on Route 1 in Walpole. There's another one down in South Attleboro, out west. But it's a big used car lot that sells mm-hmm. cars that are probably 3, maybe 4 years and newer. The price
okay.
is the price is the price. There's no negotiation. The trade-in is done separately from the purchase of the car. So if you had a trade-in and you said, you
yep.
know what, I'm going to trade my car in, I'm going to ride my bicycle home, they will give you the same amount whether you walked home or whether you traded it in for another car. So you have a pretty good feeling that the price you pay is the price that the car is worth. So that, you know, if you don't want to deal with the whole negotiation side of the world, that type
yeah.
of dealership is a good way to go. There are a couple of websites, Car Gurus, and IC Cars, the letter I,
okay.
ccars.com. In fact, we had the folks on from IC Cars last week. And they're good because what you can do is you can go to you go to a conventional used car dealer or a new car dealer that has used cars. You can go and you can
sure.
say, oh, look, they're looking to get $15,000 for this car. Let me just go real quick on IC Cars or Car Gurus and look and see what are other cars that are similar in the same area selling for. So you could, there's nothing worse than going into a car dealership and seeing a sign that says, you know, $4,000 price reduction. It went from $20,000 to $16,000. And see that $16,000 is what the car should sell for. So they artificially
yeah.
raise the price to lower it down. To, you know, so you think you're getting a good deal. In fact, you're probably getting an okay deal, but you're not getting the fantastic deal you think you are. The other thing is what, and IC Cars just came up with this recently. They have something called the 17-digit serial number of a car, the VIN, the vehicle identification number. They actually
yeah.
have a VIN decoder that works with a smartphone, and you can get it from their website. And what you do is you go over to the barcode on the car. You click it with your phone, and it tells you what the car is, what it should, what the typical transaction price, whether there's any recalls that are available. So all of a sudden now it does the little search for you, and you go, oh, this you know, this Toyota Corolla that I'm interested in is selling for $13,000. Oh, wait, you know, 5 miles away, there's one for 12, there's one for 15, there's another one for 16. Maybe 13,000 is a good deal. Maybe I should just buy it. And there's always room for, with most dealerships, there's always room for a little bit of negotiation. The big dealership like CarMax, that is not the case. Their price is their price. So if you like to go in and you just don't want to have to go through any of the headaches and hassles and know that you're going to get maybe not a fantastic price, but you're going to get a good price, and you're not going to get taken advantage of. AAA's, to plug us a little bit, AAA's car buying service also does used cars as well, kind of the same idea. But if you're looking, what I like about a place like CarMax is a perfect place for somebody who doesn't know what they want. So
exactly.
Yeah, so if you're like, I don't know if I want a small SUV, I don't know if I want a big truck, so all of a sudden now you can go around and you can go, well, there's two or three small SUVs, there's two or three of these, there's two or three of these, and I'm gonna go try them all and see which one seems the best. So you get
now,
a good
let
variety.
Me ask you another question, because you've made me think of something else, and this may be a very remedial question. So if I use the IC Cars app and I scan the VIN number, but not necessarily on the car I'm buying, but even on the car I'm trading in, it'll give me that ballpark of what the price is. Now, I realize a car dealership price or the Blue Book value.
Yeah.
If it tells me what the Blue Book value is, percentage-wise, what should I expect to get? Because I know I'm not going to get 100%. That's common sense. But is it a 50% cut? Is it a...
Yeah, I mean, there are... If you use other sites as well, like Kelley Blue Book and NADA Guides and places like that, you can also... They'll list what the trade-in value is based on the overall condition. So it'll be like, you know, fair, good, whatever the case is. So you get an idea what the overall condition of the vehicle is and the idea. But there's no hard and fast rule that the retail, if something retails for, you know, let's say $5,000. Well, keep in mind the dealer has to go through the car, do anything that's immediately wrong with it and fix it. They also have to provide some sort of warranty, and they also have to provide some reconditioning costs. So, you know, so by the time you're done and thinking that they have to do all of those things, so that car that's on the lot for $5,000, they may take that car and trade for $3,000 or $3,500 or something like that.
Gotcha.
And you know, that's another way to look. One of the other places you can look, and people have had good and bad luck, is some of the former daily rentals, the Hertz, Avis, you know, those kind of places. Right across the street from our Westwood office, there's I think it's Thriftier Enterprise, and they sell their used cars. They're late model. They all have higher mileage, you know, 40,000 miles on them or so. My last two cars were both former rentals, and we had good luck with both of them. So, you know, you have an idea. Did somebody go out and beat the daylights out of it? Well, if it was a Mustang convertible, probably. If it was a Toyota RAV4, probably not. You know, and the same thing with there. Those prices tend to be, those are all, that's the price. Here it is on the window. That's what it's worth. And their trade-in, I know at the Enterprise place, because I went over there and looked, I said, how do you handle trade-ins? And the guy said to me, pretty simple. Go on Kelley Blue Book, look up your car, be realistic about the conditions. So if it's fair, it's fair. If your car's pristine, it's the best price it is. And he said, that's what we give you.
Yeah.
He said, there's no negotiation.
No,
you know, but I always keep in the back of my mind what somebody told me long ago about the store up in Maine. And it said, we buy junk, we sell antiques. And you know, so when you go to bring something in, they scratch their head, they walk around, they look at the tires, they go, geez, you know, this thing's pretty well, you know, pretty worn out. And then they clean it and polish it and put it on the lot and say, this was driven by a guy and his wife, and, you know, they didn't have dogs and they didn't smoke in the car, and this thing's perfect. So, you know, keep in mind there's a little bit of that out there still too.
Absolutely. I thank you very much
for
your time. It was very enlightening.
All right. Take care, Tim. Bye-bye.
You have a great day.
You as well. Let's take one more call and then take a break. Let's talk to Sal in East Boston. Sal, is that you?
It's me.
It is.
I called you about a couple of weeks about, if you remember, the knock sensor.
Kind of. Yep.
Okay, so I had it fixed. Someone did it for me.
Okay.
Now, seems to have went off and all that. Now, why were we going to number three? Because the book is saying go into number three if you want to, you know, in case you get stuck in snow. You know, the VTM port.
Oh, okay.
You press that to go into it. How's it work?
No, it should. So, remind me again what kind of car this is.
It's a 2005 Honda Pilot.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, it should be, unless there's some sort of transmission problem. So you're saying that when you shift into drive, everything's fine.
Everything's fine, reverse.
Yeah.
You know, all that.
Yeah.
But it won't go into that D3.
D3, okay.
Yeah. So I don't know if you got to press the VTM button
you shouldn't have to. You shouldn't have to.
No?
No. No, That is more for, I believe in that car it locks the all-wheel drive system in place. So I don't,
right.
I don't know. D3 is simple enough. D3 is just the regular transmission performing the way it should without as much overdrive. So you would use D3, for instance, in, say you were towing a trailer. And you were towing,
okay.
you were towing up the mountains, and you didn't want to have it shifting up and down so much, so it wouldn't go into essentially fourth gear.
Oh, I see.
Yeah,
okay.
Or it wouldn't go into overdrive the same way. So it's not gonna. What happens when you shift into D3? What happens?
Nothing. It won't go.
Oh, it just won't go
into D.
Oh.
It just won't go into D3 and two.
Yeah.
The last one.
Yep. Huh.
So I don't know.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to do a little bit of research on that one.
Yeah,
but those gears, you know, you should be able to put it into D2 and D3, and it should drive normally. In fact, I think D2 actually starts in second gear, and D3 I think just holds in third gear.
Right.
Yeah.
It
sounds like. Now, does anything flash on the dash when you try to do that?
No, nothing.
No. Okay.
No, I mean, I never used it before.
Yeah.
I never went into the D3 or D2.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I never had any to go there.
Well, there's no reason to start now then.
Right.
Yeah.
But is it a transmission problem?
It sounds like an electronic shifter problem. But let me do a little bit of thinking on this one.
Okay.
But I, right. If I had to guess, I would say it's an electronic selector switch. But because it doesn't, because it's shifting normally in drive, so that's
right.
Telling me the internal parts of the transmission are all working the way they're supposed to. So it's, you know, it's if you said to me, yeah, you know, the transmission shifts fine, but all of a sudden it skips from, you know, it starts off in first, shifts to second, and then goes into fourth and skips third altogether, I'd say, oh, you have a problem inside the transmission. Or,
right,
or if you
right.
said to me it flares when it's going into third gear, and then you have a problem in the transmission. This sounds like an electronic selector problem, not a valve body problem. It sounds more like built into the shifter itself, but I need to do just a little bit of research on that one.
Is that a big problem? I mean, is that serious?
How long have you had this car?
I bought it used
yep.
in 2013.
Yep.
Hasn't 2013.
Hasn't been a problem so far, right?
No. But I never had to shift in there. So I thought that once I had that knock sensor fixed and everything else, oh, let me try it. I thought you had to press the button, the VH1, whatever you call it.
Yeah.
The VTM4. Yep. You press that, and then you shift into it.
What that does is that locks up all of the difference between. In other words, your car is basically a front wheel drive car that when it's in all wheel drive, it's front wheel drive, and it allows the rear wheels to turn. When you push that button, what it does is it locks up the front and rear together, so you have so you have better traction in poor weather conditions. And you you said your car's 2010, right?
No, five.
Oh, 2005. Yeah. So, like I said, let me think about it during the next commercial and see if I can come up with something.
Okay.
Right.
So I'll listen to you. Right?
All right. That
you
want to That's what I want you to do.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Al. Bye bye.
Bye bye.
Why don't we take a break, pay some bills? My name's John Paul. This is the Car Doctor Program. Let me put my transmission hat on and see if I can come up with something. We'll be right back.
She's real fine, my 409. She's real fine, my 409, my 409. Well, I saved my pennies and I saved my...
Well, I left Kentucky back in 49 and went to Detroit working on assembly line. The first year they had me putting wheels on Cadillacs. Every day I'd watch them beauties roll by and sometimes I'd hang my head and cry, 'cause I always wanted me one that was long and black. One day I devised myself a plan that should be the envy of most any man. I'd sneak it out of there in a lunchbox in my hand. Now, getting caught meant getting fired, but I...
And welcome back to the Car Doctor Program on AM 950 WROL, the Spirit of Boston. Well, I did a little bit of quick research while the commercials were playing and was thinking about Sal's Honda Pilot with the doesn't shift in, you know, shifts in drive. Drive seems to work fine. And it appears to be kind of what I thought, a shifter issue, perhaps a shift solenoid problem. And I'm just looking at a symptom index of things it can be. And when you have operation in drive, but you don't have operation in say, like low or something, the first thing it says to look at is to look at the shifter solenoid. Again, these are things that, as you start to get into the transmission, can be a bit of a problem. But where drive and reverse are working fine, It doesn't mean that it looks like, you know, sometimes you wonder about things and it's like, well, if it's working in drive and it doesn't work in reverse, it could be a pump problem and you know, seals that are an issue. It doesn't look like that. It looks more like it's an issue with the shift solenoid valve. And again, it can be a bad wiring in there. It can be anything that sort of fits into that category. Okay. We have our drawing for our Bob Tasca funny car model. Now the headline. What was that?
User error.
User error for our Bob. And I'll be honest, we didn't get a lot of entrants. But somebody is going to win, and I wish everybody could win, you know, because people wrote things like great show, I listen every week. Please enter my name. I listen every week. I always look forward to your show each week. And this person was paying enough attention because he knows that I'm kind of cleaning off my desk a little bit. So, but this wasn't on my desk. This is actually in the package. Never been opened. And it's Tasca's funny car. It's a model of Tasca's funny car when he was running the top alcohol car, not the top fuel car that he's running now. So it was when he was number one in that category. And it's a pretty nice little model. So if you like model cars and your collectibles and things like that, you have a chance to win. And so I don't have to feel guilty. I'm going to let Dennis choose the winner.
Eyes closed. And press this button here.
All right. Who won?
Mike F.
All right.
I can't say the last name, so Mike F.
Okay, so I'll keep that so I don't forget. Michael, I will email you because I have your email because I need your mailing address, and you just send me your mailing address, so...
So I picked the one that I was saying that I was going to pick earlier, but
that's
right.
Even,
I did close my eyes.
You did close your eyes. You did it all randomly. I did not. I did not in the magician world. I did not force force anything on you like they do? I don't know. I watch. Yeah, I watch too much Penn and Teller.
Penn and Teller.
Yeah, yeah. Which I like, by the way. Let's talk to Paul in Braintree.
Good morning.
Good morning,
Paul. There we go.
There we go.
Fine. How are you?
Good.
I wanted to thank you and give you an update. I emailed you. I had a replacement I thought was just going to be a roll beam left light in my car. And it turned out that I had to replace the entire light unit.
Oh, yeah.
And it's amazing.
Uh-oh. We just have to retrain Dennis. So Paul had a great story there about replacing something. So hopefully Paul calls right back because I don't know what's going on with Dennis today. He didn't get enough sleep. I don't know.
Definitely didn't get enough sleep last night.
All right. So
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
Paul, call back. I want to hear more of the story. So I don't know. He's going to have to retrain him. Going to have to send him out, get him trained again. Let's see what happens. Let's see. It's so confusing here. You know, he took a week off. He took a bunch of weeks off. His first week back, he was fine. I don't know what happened. The force apparently is not with you.
No, we have Paul back now.
Oh, okay. All right.
Something you said.
Yeah.
Okay. Guess I don't know how much got out there, but I had to replace the...
You thought you were going to replace a bulb, and it turned out you had to replace the entire assembly.
Absolutely. And fortunately, I had, through AAA, the extended warranty.
Mm-hmm.
Company called Mercury.
Yep.
Company. And all but except for the $50 deductible, right. They covered everything. I still had to pay for the bulb.
Yep.
Which was a couple hundred dollars.
Yeah, and it's because they consider a bulb like wiper blades and tires and brake pads. They consider it a wear item because.
Well, I didn't mind. I wasn't really complaining about the insurance, but just the cost of the bulb.
I would complain.
I think on newer models they've gone to LED, which are long lasting and.
It's like all that stuff. LED bulbs last forever. The electronics that power them may not. So, I was thinking about that. You know, I replaced a bunch of, I had, you know, little downlight spotlight bulbs in my house, and I replaced them with LED, you know, kits. So I'm like, and, you know, they have like a million hour life, unless the electronics go bad. Then when the electronics go bad, you throw the whole thing away. So that's kind of the problem. But yeah, some of the bulbs, you know, you think that it's going to last a long time. And the LEDs that we're starting to see in some cars now, they work really well. And I haven't seen it yet, but there was just a special, a news special or something about headlight laws and how they need to be updated because, even as good as headlights are today, they're not as good as they could be in other places around the world. So it's sort of like, well, we have some good stuff, and the new LEDs are good, but there's also better lights that are available. And I've been saying that for a while, that there's as good as headlights are. When you're driving on... with your low beams on, if you're driving more than, say, 45 miles an hour, you're actually out driving how far you can see. So if you glance down the road at 45 and say, oh, there's nothing ahead, by the time you actually get to that same spot, the next time you look, you've actually outdriven it a little bit. So,
yeah, I've noticed with my car, although the lights are much brighter than they were on the old Volvo that I had before, they don't seem to carry as far as they used to. And I even have a little device in my car with a little not crawl button, but
yeah.
I can move the lights up and down a couple of angles,
mm-hmm.
which is pretty neat. But they still, you know, the old incandescent bulbs, I have no idea what they were. They seem to go down the road further, maybe not as bright, but further than these high intensity, if that's what they are,
yeah.
light bulbs.
Yeah, well, the high-intensity bulbs have a very specific cutoff. If you're on a dark, deserted road and you turn your lights on, you can look down. It's like bright, 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 boom, and it's dark. Where the where the older style incandescent and even halogen bulbs are sort of bright and then dim, 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 dim. So you can see a very specific, you can see the line where your bulbs actually almost make like a 90-degree angle. And then it's very flat and sharp. And you're right. They, as good as they are, they're only as good as they are for shorter distances. I was sitting in on one of our AAA classes down in Rhode Island the other day, and the instructor, who's a former colonel at the state police in Rhode Island, said his recommendation is everybody should drive with their high beams on when there's nobody on the road, so you can get this, so you can see better, and you're able to get more visibility in the road. And of course, you know, dim your lights when you pull behind somebody, or you know, when somebody's coming the other way. But the idea of driving with your high beams on, most people don't think about it unless it's really like one of those dark, deserted nights. But if you're driving on a local road and there's not really a lot of traffic around, your high beams are going to illuminate that much better. You're going to be able to look for stuff in the road. You're going to look for animals and things like that. So yeah, we're starting to see there's some thoughts now about changing the rules and regulations for headlights, so we can get even better headlights on the road. And better headlights don't mean necessarily more expensive headlights, just with your car.
I find I have where I live, I'm a mile off the main road, and it's very nice, but it's winding. And at night, I have my high beams on all the time, just because they're twining, and we have deer occasionally and other critters. So it's nice to see them. I was wondering why I'm always putting my brights on. I'm afraid of blinding oncoming people,
right.
And so I try to lower them, but it really does illuminate it. I think the other question, when you're buying a car, new or I guess used, is there any way to get an idea what replacement cost of items like that? I would never think when I bought a car to say, well, gee, you know, if this ever goes, it's going to cost me $600.
Yeah, and it's kind of funny because I remember when HID lights came out and they said they'll last forever. You'll never have to put a headlight bulb in. Well, I guess forever means like 5 or 6 years.
Well, yeah, as a matter of fact, I think I have a longer. I was going to buy an aftermarket one at maybe a third the price, but apparently these are guaranteed for a number of years,
right?
If they go. So, I mean, it was worth spending that extra money to ensure that if I want the labor cost of replacing this bulb, which, by the way, as you probably know, you got to put the car in the lift. There's you have to remove this cover behind the wheel well, take that out to get to the bulb.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's not unscrewing something from the front of the car.
No, and that's an easy one, because in some cars you actually have to take off the front bumper fascia.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, you know, you think of those things. No, it would be nice to be able to say, you know, I'm going to go buy this car, and I know that these, and there are studies that are done on used cars that, you know, if you're thinking about buying a used car, then they look at typical costs of replacement items like oxygen sensors and, you know, air filters and all those kind of things, and look at them all and go, well, this is going to cost X amount of dollars in a Toyota, it's going to cost twice as much money in a Ford, it's going to cost half as much money in a Chevy, but you never know. And then what sometimes happens is, as parts fail more often, the prices start to go down. So you might say, I don't want to buy that, you know, that new Ford EcoSport SUV, because I know the headlights in that are going to be expensive if they ever break. But on the other hand, you know, 2 years later, you find out everybody switched to that style headlight and the prices come down and it's become more affordable. So, yeah. So, I mean, you can get an idea, but not always a great idea.
Well, one other thing, and I don't want to take up time. It was a bad couple of weeks. I had to replace the battery, and the place I went to, very nice, they suggest I go with a 5-year battery. I had a 3-year battery that, you know, one of the cells died, you know, whatever the day the third year ended. You know, they had that perfectly timed. I had to call AAA to get, I thought I left a dome light on. Mm-hmm. It wasn't that. It just one of the cells. So I put a 5-year battery in. I think it's an X-Side. Is that a good investment? For a 5-year rate of 3?
Because it's probably really not a 5. It's probably 3 years, 100%, and the other 2 years are somewhat prorated.
Okay.
Yeah.
It wasn't that much more expensive. Yeah.
But the average life of a battery in the Northeast is about, I don't know, 55 months, I think. So, you know, if it is in fact a 5-year battery and it is guaranteed for, you know, fully guaranteed for 5 years or prorated for 5 years, when it gets close to 5 years, you'll probably need a new one. And we've seen batteries fail as little as 3 years. There's nothing like the original battery that came with the car. They tend to be the ones that last the longest, even though, they're made by the same battery company. It could be, you know, it could be Johnson Controls or East Penn Battery Company or something like that. They're all made by the same battery company, and what happens is they are made somewhat differently. So even though that factory battery only has a 1-year warranty, I talk to people that have, you know, batteries in their car that are brand new and last 5, 6, 7, 8 years, and the battery that was in my car was at about 7 years, and I left one of the rear doors open and the dome light stayed on for the weekend, and that ended its life. So
I had to replace the original battery as a battery about 3 years ago. It was that time when a lot of batteries sitting in the shelves had some problems with it. They replaced 3 batteries within a couple of months.
And
I had a little problem with that. Convincing them I didn't do anything.
We rotate our batteries out of stock at AAA every 6 months, and I've been told ours are made by East Penn, which also makes a million other batteries. They make batteries for BMW and whatever. And I've been told that when our batteries get sent back to the East Penn battery company, they get relabeled as Walmart batteries.
Yeah.
The exact same battery. So they peel off. Which, you know, no one really wants to say how old is the shelf life of a battery. I just bought a little battery for something, and, you know, it was brand new in the box. And I happened to, when I took it out of the box, it was a year and a half old. And I'm like, the thing only normally lasts 2. How much life am I going to get out of this thing? So, but they have, the place I went to happened to have it, so I bought it anyway. But
that's good. Yeah. Again, thank you for all your help. I really appreciated it. And, hope I don't have another problem for a couple of weeks at least.
I hope not either. All right, take care, Paul. Bye-bye.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
All right, before we get to Peter, I want to talk about the car that got me around last week, and that's the BMW i3. It's a compact 4-passenger, 4-door electric car. Comes in 2 models, the base and the sportier S model. Both versions can be optioned with a range extender. The range extender is a small 2-cylinder generator that's designed to add about 60 miles of additional range to the electric motor. The range extender gasoline generator is generally designed to help eliminate the fear of running out of electricity and having no place to recharge, called range anxiety. Our road test was in the i3S with the range extender, so the sportier version is 184 horsepower electric motor. That's up 14 horsepower over the standard. Very good acceleration, 0 to 60 in 7 seconds. There are several settings to maximize the motor's performance or range. When fully charged, the i3 can travel about 120 miles or so. And with a full gas tank, it offers about another 60 or 70 miles. The generator only has a 2-gallon tank. So, again, it's designed to, there's no place to recharge. Well, I can go another 50, 60, 70 miles on gasoline. And if I have to go further than that, I'll find another gas station, buy another gallon of gas. So I'm ready to go. So the 2-cylinder engine generator is a bit noisy. We went out to dinner with it one night when the electric battery was completely dead. And it sort of sounded like behind you. But it was fine. Recharging the battery takes 5 to 7 hours when plugged into a level 2 battery charger, so the kind you see by the, you know, in parking lots and things. Plugging into the 110-volt trickle charger takes a lifetime to recharge. Took about 24 hours. The handling of the small car was surprisingly good. The ride over choppy roads gets a little tiring and noisy, especially with the slightly sportier suspension and tires on the car. It's a great city car, though. But I did drive it back and forth to work for 3 or 4 days, you know, out on highway speeds, and it was fine. The cabin of the small car is pretty open and airy. The front seats are comfortable, supportive. Overall, the cabin's quite attractive with its mixture of, I felt all eco inside of it. It had kind of weird materials and reclaimed woods, and I just felt like I should go recycle afterwards. But the car itself is kind of unique because the rear doors are sort of clamshell doors like a little pickup truck. So you open up the front door, open up the back, there's no posts. So it's easy to get it in and out of. It claims to seat two people back there. It's a little tight. I don't know about that. But I guess two small people could fit. The controls are a bit odd. It's sort of a push-button start and an odd shifter arrangement. The shifter in this was easier to figure out than the last BMW sedan that I drove, which I tended to have more problems with. Still, as good as the controls are, there's a little too much distraction here and there. There's a small center console, glove box, two odd cup holders, one sort of where you would expect it and one that you can't use. It's sort of in the center console area. So you, once you put something there, you have to, it's just, it's BMW saying Americans want cup holders, so we stuck one in wherever there was room, and that's kind of what they did. It seems kind of silly. The only good thing about it, if you did put a soda or something there, at least it wouldn't tip over. But you also can't get to it when you want it. Our car had the optional smart cruise control, which added forward collision warning with pedestrian detection. The BMW i3 is sort of a hip, stylish, eco-friendly vehicle. The biggest problem is the i3 is that its price. It competes with pure electric vehicles that offer longer range, such as the Tesla Model 3 and the Chevrolet Bolt. If you can live with a bit shorter range, there are very few vehicles that have the polarizing look of an i3. Our price, $54,000, but that was the top of the line with the range extender. I like the idea of the range extender. If you're somebody who drives more than just 5 or 10 miles back and forth to work, having that range extender as an emergency backup for it just makes a ton of sense. Let's go real quick to Peter in Hyannis. Peter?
Hey.
JP. How are you? We're losing you, Peter.
What?
We're losing you. Spin around. Do something. Hold your phone higher.
I'm in the basement.
All right.
Any better?
A little bit.
Yeah. All right. Well, first of all, thank you. Thanks to you and Dennis for this weekly show. It's a good one.
Well,
yeah.
We could almost not do it without him.
That's pretty good.
Thank you.
A couple questions.
All right, go ahead.
Quickies. Is there a product? I've got the common problem of the headlights, the plastic covers on a 2005 CR-V Honda.
Yep.
They're
getting all discolored. Go to the auto parts store or department store or something, and go to the auto parts section. If you go to Kmart, go to the car section and buy a headlight restoration kit. It'll come with some stuff to scrub the plastic so you can get it nice and clean. There is some kits that come with little buffing wheels or
I have,
and they work okay. Or
yeah.
Go out there with, go look in the closet for some off, stuff for mosquitoes. Go spray it on there, wash it off, spray it on there, wash it off, spray it on there, wash it off, and see if it makes them better.
All right.
And I have idea what's in off that takes off the haze off the plastic, but it does.
It's called off.
Yeah, it's called off. Well, I don't know.
I'll try it.
Yeah, try that.
I talked
to somebody who couldn't get an inspection sticker. The person said, I can't give you a sticker. Your headlights are too hazy. They went home. They offed them three times. They went back, and the guy said, they look fine now. No problem.
This is good.
You start that. It doesn't cost anything. Okay, one more question real quick. We're running out of time.
I got it. Okay, I'm sure there are many different kinds of solenoids. Evan Root outboard motor.
Yep.
I had that go.
Yep.
Of course, couldn't start that sticker.
Yep.
All right. And then the telephone company. Yeah. Solenoids in the in my garage. Yep. Yeah. But what is? I was going to look this up. Search. Yep. What is the function of a solenoid? But you were talking about solenoids.
Here's real quick what a solenoid does. A solenoid connects a high voltage source to whatever it powers up using a low voltage control. So okay. A solenoid is about the same thing as a relay. And what it does when you need to bring high power from, say, the high power from the battery to the starter, which requires high power, the thing that turns the solenoid on is a low-power switch. So that way you can have a little tiny wire that turns on the big fat wire that runs from one to the other.
I get it.
Okay?
That was well said.
All right. All right, good enough. Thanks, Peter.
Thanks for the info.
Yep, bye-bye. Hey, there's Paul Sullivan sitting over there playing with his phone, looking at the time. He's telling me you have 2 minutes and 5 seconds left to get out.
I'm not telling you that. Greenwich Mean Time.
Greenwich Mean Time is telling me.
Yeah. How does that sync with our own studio clock? Are we close?
Actually, it's pretty spot on.
Wow, cool.
Yeah.
Right, so it's for those of you setting your watches at home,
It
is 9:58 and 13 seconds.
And the weather is clear and 63 degrees.
Remember when you used to call the time?
I know.
And they said the time at the beep will be 10 o'clock.
Here we go back down Geezer Road.
Yeah, it's the land of the old white men.
That's right. Yeah. So what's going on for the Irish Hit Parade today, Mr. Sullivan?
I don't think there's a remote today, so it'll be less hectic than it's been the last couple of weeks.
I know.
It'll be nice and demure and calm and sedate.
And it's a beautiful day, so if people are in or out, they can enjoy the very best of Irish music heard right here every Saturday and Sunday.
There is a bright golden haze on the meadow, yes.
Is that
another old reference?
Yeah, two.
Oklahoma.
I was thinking.
Rodgers and Hammerstein.
Yeah.
1940-something.
1941.
Something like that.
It was the spring.
See, Dennis is looking at me like I'm a crazy man.
It was the spring. That. I remember it. With a little bit of haze myself.
Yeah. It's Gordon, what was his name?
I'm not much younger than you guys, but that even went over my head. Oh, wow.
Gordon McRae and the Partridge Family mother, Shirley.
Oh, yeah. Shirley Jones?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Well, there you go.
Call me if I'm wrong, folks.
And they will.
They sure will.
All right. We have to go because Greenwich Mean Time says we're about out of time,
right,
I bet.
Is that right? Let's check. Hold on. The piano guy doing?
Yeah. I hear the piano guy.
Is the piano guy doing it?
Yeah, there he is.
Yeah, he's got about, I don't know, let's say, I'm going to turn my phone here. He's got 10 seconds.
This is where we need Facebook Live just for this
sort
of stuff. Hey, until next week, make sure you wear your seatbelt, drive safely, be good to your car. Talk to you all next week. Bye-bye.